Welcome to Culinary Convo. I am your host, Devin Ream. The coffee is poured and your spot at the table is open. I've got my mise en place, and if your mind is open, let us begin. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Plate in Time. This week, 1819, with my lovely wife, Kaylee.
Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
You know, not much. My plate has landed in a time period in which you don't connect with whatsoever, from what I gather.
Anything before 1900.
You're just out of it.
It's never interested me.
Yeah.
So 1819, this is like, you know.
A pivotal year.
Okay. I don't know. It's not that interesting to me.
Well, I will say there's a lot of things back then that as a woman you would not be able to do.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, maybe like subconsciously.
Right. You're like, oh, that's the olden times like, I was not a person.
I would have made hoe cakes all day.
Yeah.
Like, where's the fun in that?
Yeah. I really don't know what women did back then besides home duties, right? So cleaning, cooking, taking care of children, you know?
Like farm stuff.
I would think so.
They were on a farm.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. This wasn't long after the 1700s, so
right,
they didn't have as much to do as later years. So.
I just have this image of them making flags. Like, that's all they're doing.
Like Betsy Ross.
Yeah. Yeah, they're sewing blankets and making flags. And
yeah. Maybe it's kind of like those videos on YouTube where people recreate, like, what life was like in 1772. You know, how people made their food and
isn't that a crazy YouTube channel?
Yeah.
Like,
it's crazy that someone was like, I'm going to make a channel all about this.
Right.
And not crazy in a bad way, just like, I would have never thought of that.
I mean, I wouldn't have half of the things that they have.
No, they have things I've never heard of.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that are clearly outdated.
Right. That no one uses whatsoever today.
But it's what they did.
That's what they did. And I will say, that's why we do A Plate in Time.
That's right.
Is to clear up any misnomers of what was going on back then. Not of what women were doing during the time, but just in the food arena. And maybe it'll touch on cultural things here and there. Oh my gosh, we have a biscuit on the table.
Biscuit is visiting.
Oh my.
He's like, I love 1800s.
Yeah.
He's I'm like a real history buff, not like my mom.
Yeah. He's like, ugh, sailing the blue 1642, am I right? We're like, that's an awful thing, Biscuit, actually. That was Columbus, and we don't really.
That was 1442.
No, it wasn't.
1492.
Oh, 1492.
But not 1642.
Yeah.
What's that?
I have no idea.
I don't even know, because I don't care. I don't care what happened.
Wow. What if that was like the first, like, I don't know, first stepping on the continent or something? I have no idea. But yeah. Okay. As you can tell, that's why I do the food parts and not the actual historical stuff.
We're not historians. We're not professors.
Right. Yeah.
Let's.
Hey, everybody. Once again, let's clap for Missouri and Oregon public schools. Huh?
Ooh.
Yeah. Woo. All right. On to 1819. We are looking at foodreference.com's food timeline from 1811 to 1900. And I don't know why they start at 1811. Maybe it's just because that's the beginning of the tens decade. I'm not sure. But anyway, in 1819, going over some of the goings-ons during that time, you had Stephen McCormick received a patent for a cast iron plow with replaceable parts.
Ooh.
big deal right there. Hey, I mean, you know, if you had a cracked plow, not good. Not good.
You think he's the, like, spice?
I don't know.
Company
maybe
guy?
McCormick? Maybe. I mean, it's McCormick. Yeah. In 1819, a plague of locusts devoured every plant in the Red River District of Manitoba.
See, I just...
What?
This does not... I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, this is what you were dealing with at that time. Yeah. And I think that's why I don't care as much about this time, because it's like...
Their hardships mean nothing to me, is what you just said. Why?
Yeah, maybe I did say that. It just... I don't know. I don't want...
I'll admit, like, the locust thing, it's going to come back up because of climate-related stuff.
Yeah, okay.
But it has been something that we've really shoved on the back burner, because we really haven't had to mess with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, yeah. And then also in 1819, William T.G. Morton was born. He died in 1868, so wasn't a super long liver there.
Usually wasn't.
Yeah. He
super
was
super long liver.
Right, right. Liver of life. Yeah. Can you can you just listen for a moment? He was an American surgeon, and in 1846 he became the first dentist to use ether or lethion during a tooth extraction.
Oh.
Yeah. So he helps people.
But did the person die?
They don't say.
Yeah. So do you see?
Well, he used ether. I'm guessing the guy lived.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Also in 1819, Spain ceded Florida to the United States, and we've regretted it ever since.
Not Listen, really. He can make that joke, because people that live in Florida make that joke.
Right, yeah. So. Yeah. And in 1819, Florida Man was born. Yeah.
I didn't know Florida's that old.
Yeah, yeah, yep. Honestly, when I was a little kid, like little kid, I remember in a history course, they were like, oh, we're going to go over the 13 colonies. And I just remembered it was up and down the East Coast. Mm-hmm. And so somebody was like, what was the most southern state? And I remember raising my hand so confidently because I was like, I've been to Disney World. I know this answer. And I answer, I'm like, Florida. And they're like, no. I'm like, no, I'm gonna sit down. I'm like, why did I stand up to answer that? Like,
yeah, see, in my head, because I have anxiety, I would like be like, oh, even if I know it's the right answer, I'm not gonna say it, because what if it's wrong? And then I'm gonna make a fool of myself in front of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the moment would pass. Right. And then it would be like, oh, it's Delaware. It's like, oh, thankfully I did not raise my hand and say Florida.
Right.
Or else I would have looked stupid.
Well, and now you know where my anxiousness was born, was after that question. Because I was like, Florida. Yeah. No, Devin, that is incorrect.
A real confidence, like it's deflated now.
Yeah. It was this glorious, you know, multicolored, you know, like hot air balloon, and then in one fell swoop the basket just hits the ground harder than anything you've ever heard.
And it didn't even take a lot.
No.
It was like a little pin.
Right.
It just took it all down.
And then also in 1819, the whaling era in the Hawaiian Islands began when two New England ships, the Equator and the Balena, became the first whaling ships to arrive.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Not good.
It helped at the time, but we don't do that any longer.
Not true.
Well, some countries do it, and some native
dolphins,
tribes do
sharks.
It. Right.
I'm sure some whales, like killer whales.
I'm just saying it's not as common, I guess, is what I should
we
have
don't use
said.
Blubber.
Right.
Like they did back then.
A lot of native tribes do, other countries do, but us as Americans do not. Yeah. Because we're not needing, wasn't it gas lamps?
Yeah.
That they use that
for? Like for lamps.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, The first boat passed through the Erie Canal from Utica to Rome, New York. On board were Governor DeWitt Clinton and various state officials and others.
DeWitt.
What's,
he's got yeah. DeWitt.
Mr. Clinton, what is your first name? And everybody's like, Bill. And he's Bill. DeWitt. And it's like, no.
I didn't know there was a Rome in New York.
Yeah.
It's like Rome, Italy?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was Utica, Rome. Those were like larger, you know.
I don't think it's like Rome, though.
No.
I think
no,
they lied.
I think. Well, I don't think they lied. I think they just said, oh, like, Rome's
this will
a nice
be the
name.
Next Rome.
No, like, I think they just thought Rome's a nice name. And it's a big city.
Well, I can't trust anyone named DeWitt, so.
Well, I don't think Governor DeWitt named it.
But in that time, there were people naming their children DeWitt and towns towns outside of Rome. They were calling it Rome.
Yeah.
So.
And then in scandalous news, J.J. Wood patented a plow with interchangeable parts. And that was September 1st of 1819. I don't know if people remember, but Stephen McCormick, he received a patent for a cast iron plow.
Oh, wow. Okay.
With replaceable parts.
That's
J.J.
Really...
Wood patented one just with interchangeable parts. It didn't have to be cast iron.
That's really dramatic.
Yeah, J.J. Wood's like, oh, you did it with cast iron, Stephen. And he's like, yes, J.J., I did. He's like, I just did it with all goods. And it's like, and he just, that is the day. I bet, like, down the line here, it'll say, 1819, after receiving J.J. Wood's, you know, memorandum, Stephen passed away. Like, yeah, I bet that's what's coming up. Also in 1819, you have Oliver Evans, who died. He was an American inventor. He designed the first automatic flour mill.
Oh.
Yeah, the grain moved automatically through a series of five machines to deliver flour packed in barrels at the end.
I think these types of things are interesting, like things that have stood the test of time.
Yeah.
But then when it's like there's a clearly a fight happening of different plows and which
Stephen
one's better.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, okay. But this, you know, flour mills are really important.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and then American steamship, the SS Savannah, sailed from Savannah, Georgia for Liverpool, England, the first steamship to cross the Atlantic. It arrived at Liverpool on June 20th, 1819.
When did it leave? Like 1818?
No, it left in 1819. Maybe like in, I don't know, May something, probably. I would guess.
It took a while.
Yeah, it took
a while. For ships, at least a few months.
Yeah, it's probably April, May. You know, got to watch out for icebergs, from my understanding.
It's like the first cruise.
Maybe.
You know?
Well, really, the reason why they talk about some of these things is it deals with commerce and the spreading of food. So you have North America that can finally bring foods to England and a lot of European foods that can now be, brought back to the States. You know, then in 1819, the New York State Board of Agriculture was established. It is the first organization of its kind in the U.S. So before then, it was just a bunch of farmers that talked to each other every now and again and were like, did that do really well, Job? And he's like, well, Jebediah, this year for tomatoes, I poured water in the morning. Ooh. Really? Yep. How did it work out? It was like last year. That was it. That's all they did. And then the agriculture, you know, board was made and they started making, you know, they're like Farmer's Almanac. We've got this and that. We're the New York State Board of Agriculture. Yeah. Kaylee's like enthused.
I have nothing to say.
Then Sir Joseph William Bazalgett was born. He was a British civil engineer, and he designed the main sewer system for London.
Oh, thank goodness.
Yeah. So once you eat it, he knew where it would flow. That's Sir Joseph William Bazalgett.
Well, maybe there is one in London, but in Paris, they have a whole museum about sewage systems.
Right. Yeah.
And I will not be going on that when we get to go. Yeah, I'm not. Stinky. I'm not paying money for that. Sorry. I do think it's.
P-U.
I do think it's interesting. You know, because we don't even think about that. Like, yeah. You know, we're just used to it.
I almost want to go just to state the fact. They'll be like, well, our main sewer system, like, it was made by Sir Joseph William Bazalgette in 1819. I don't need to take this tour. And then I leave.
Okay, so when we're in Paris, I'm going to be sitting at a cafe with my croissant and my coffee. Mm-hmm. You can go do that.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be part of that, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Well, back in America, the periodical American Farmer was founded by John Skinner.
It's my favorite.
It's your favorite American.
It's my
Farmer.
Favorite periodical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Herman Melville was born. He died September 28th of 1891. So just switch the 1-9 and 9-1. Whoa! American writer, best known for the novel Moby Dick or The Whale.
I haven't read it.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't make us read it in school.
You can call me Ahab. Yeah. Or my name is Ahab.
I don't know.
I didn't read it. Yeah, I didn't read either. Great White Whale. I remember that. I think I was about to read it. And then it was like, no, you don't get to read the book you want to read. You have to read this book. And I don't remember what that book was.
Isn't it like 800 pages?
It's fairly long, yeah.
It's long.
Yeah, it's fairly long.
And then this guy just has a vendetta against a whale, so.
A good reason, but.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay, well.
Anyway. according to Wikipedia.org, you have Cayer. Cayer. It is a Swiss chocolate brand, and it had a production factory based in Brook. It was founded in Vevey by François-Louis Cayer in 1819 and remained independent until the early 20th century when it associated with other producers. Shortly before, Cayer opened its main factory at Brook in 1898. The company was finally bought by Nestle in 1929 and became a brand. Cayer is the oldest chocolate brand still in existence in Switzerland.
See, this is what I want to learn.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That
it's
way.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's like over 200 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. I find it interesting that, like, even though Nestle bought it, they're like, we want you to keep your name. That way we can say you're the oldest chocolate. They're like, don't change just because we bought you.
Yeah.
Yeah. But according to Wagner KC, at .weebly.com, which I say this, it was a blog. Mr. Cole Wagner, he did a History 127 class project at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
So, is he a student? Or?
Yeah, he was a student at the time. Yeah.
Okay.
Talking about 1819 and the U.S. food industry and how canning became an industry that was widespread to preserve goods.
Mm.
Yeah. So it reads here, preserving perishable goods had always been a problem that could not be overcome. Beginning in the late 18th century, with Napoleon Bonaparte's conquest through Europe, a newfound need for easy access to unspoiled food spawned. Napoleon needed a way to provide food for his armies far from home. Again, out of necessity, came innovation. Nicolas Appert, a Frenchman, devised the idea to store agricultural products in sealed cans that could be easily transported to Napoleon's army and received a reward of 12,000 francs for doing so. Shortly after, in 1819, the idea spread to America, where a new industry was born. Canned goods in these times were somewhat unreliable. For good reason. And their use was not realized in America until the Civil War. Mm. But the industry was born. and there were innovations to be made. Canning provided a much less cumbersome way to transport preserved goods than Thomas More's and subsequent refrigerators. They became important as westward expansion became prevalent, allowing easy access to food along the trails to the west. Even more significant was the use of canned foods for armies, both in the North and South during the Civil War. As previously mentioned, the early canning industry provided the cornerstone for innovations that have led to the mass available preserved goods that we enjoy today.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right, I guess 1819 is important.
It is. It was a big year.
Canned goods are, you know.
I don't think we will get away from them. Like ever.
No.
Apocalypse happens. We need canned goods.
Yeah, because they last a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
They make life much easier.
Yes. Yeah. And sometimes preserving them makes them better. A good mm-hmm. example, pickles.
Yeah.
Like, yo.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next thing here and the last thing. For 1819 is the Foods of England project at thefoodsofengland.co.uk. You have the 1819 published book of modern domestic cookery. That's right. It is a Foods of England online text. This looks like a heck of a book. I mean, look at it. This was the front cover.
Ugh.
Yeah. It's just words
it's
and
just
fancy
like that
script.
Old-timey, they shove like 400 words on a page.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to like keep your focus because mm-hmm. there is so much on there.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no photos, so
no,
that sucks.
Yeah. At most, it would be like an illustration.
Yeah.
Yeah. But domestic cookery and containing tow... Most approved directions for purchasing
TOE,
tow.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I'm not gonna bother.
Preserving and cooking meat, fish, poultry, game, and in all their varieties, trussing and carving, preparing soups, gravies, sauces. I believe it's supposed to be blade or like bade dishes. I don't know. Potting and pickling. Yes. Pastry, confectionery, a complete instructions to servants, or the best methods of performing their various duties. The ast of making...
I think it's art.
Yeah, it's got to be art. That's
got to
be.
Be.
Yeah, the art of making British wines, brewing, baking, third edition with additions. That's the entire title of the book. So thank God they cut it down to just modern domestic cookery, please. Like just.
I think there's a lot of typos because like.
Yeah, it's hard to translate the old English.
Yeah, because like some letters used to be backwards or like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what is this?
Yeah. General directions for the management of a family. Everyone, please pay attention. persons should endeavor to discharge the duties of the station they may fill so as to claim the respect of their compeers and afford a beneficial example to the younger branches of society. To such as are desirous of respect, this mode of conduct is a matter of necessity, the neglect of which no excuse can extenuate. The accomplishments proper for the female character are not so seriously attended to as formerly.
Please don't read all this.
When all persons, whatever might be their rank, were studious to render themselves useful, yet domestic occupation should never for one moment be neglected.
This goes on and on.
Oh, it does. Yeah. Look at
there's
this.
There's more.
Oh,
my God.
Oh, yeah. Look at this. This is pages.
You cannot read
and
all
pages.
This.
Yeah. And then finally, after like, what would you say that would be?
They
maybe
like
15,
whip
20
you
pages?
Into a person,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I'll read the last paragraph here. In a well-regulated
Unily.
I'm guessing family. Every article should be kept in constant readiness, such as broken sugar, pounded spices, etc., by which much trouble will be prevented when such articles are wanted for immediate use. Servants should also be required to pay the same attention in waiting on the family when alone as they do when there is company. This will soon become a regular habit, and visitors will occasion but little additional trouble, while everything will appear to go on smoothly. It is, woo! Oh, should you deal on credit, a book should be kept. But anyways, it goes on and on, but on to the food here. You have a cod's head, yeah? A round of beef, edge bone of beef. Then you have the receipt book, the sirloin of beef. Basically, they break everything down into like what each cut is and how you cook it. Not exactly like a, oh, add salt, add this and that, do this or what. It's just like breast of veal is composed of two parts, the ribs and brisket. The latter is thickest and is composed of gristle, the division of which you may easily discern. So it's like,
I cannot
yeah.
deal with this right now.
And then there's calf head. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. You have shoulder of mutton, leg of mutton. Yeah. So they talk about all, oh, goose. Ugh. Yes. Gotta cook
You're
the
not
goose.
Even like a fourth of the way.
No.
Scrolled. Mm-mm.
This is
down.
A long, long, text. Remember, you're supposed to be teaching your servants this as well. So,
yeah.
Wow. Hare, fowls, a pheasant, partridge. Oh, partridge in a pear tree. I remember that.
I think it would be cool to look at it, like a copy.
Yeah.
But to actually reference it today.
Might be tough.
Yeah. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't look at this anymore.
Well, remember.
My eyes are glazing over.
Hold on. So let's get this straight here. 1819, first course for January. You got ham and fowls or capons. Place the ham at the bottom of the table and the fowls at the top. A leg of lamb and spinach, garnished with the loin, fried in steaks with savoys or cabbages, and some good potatoes. Also some carrots sliced with gravy and plain melted butter and a hunting pudding. Or turkey and chine, a brisket of beef stewed and served up in soup, scotch collops, a brace of carp stewed, savoys, carrots, potatoes, and mince pies. Second course for January.
Oh my gosh.
These are like, this has to be for like what,
like
I would,
fancy people.
Oh yeah, like a
fancy
royal,
people in 1819.
Yeah,
this is not realistic.
Yeah, this is
for most people.
This was supposed to be domestic cookery and articles proper for family dinners in every month.
This is crazy.
And see, that's the thing. I would think like this first one here, the ham and fowls and all this stuff. I would assume after you cook all that, it's like we will be eating this all week. Like. Yeah. We will be, you know, doing that. And then they have the first and second course for February, March. Like, they just give
each
you the
month.
Whole year. Yeah. First course for August, September. Yep. The whole thing. How to choose beef, mutton and lamb. You know, veal.
I think we got it.
Yeah. So here, hold on. Let's see. There's fish, vegetables. How to boil scat. That's a good one. To pot carp. Yep. To fry trout, to fry oysters, to stew oysters, to broil, domestic cooking, and oh, the fat can be taken off when cold. So that, yeah, they're talking about gravies, giblet soup. Oh, we're in the soups right now. Here, let's go all the way to, yep, here you go. Useful receipt book to remove chaps, a headache, weak eyes. Hey, well, I got weak eyes. but a headache, it said this unpleasant pain may be prevented by wearing the hair short and by washing the head daily with cold water, then rub the hair dry and expose it to the air.
Okay.
That's how you get rid of a headache.
Yeah. I haven't tried it, so I can't say it doesn't work, but I don't know.
I just imagine a bunch of like men or women reading that, and they're like, did they really think when people said headache that it was like a pain on your scalp and not probably. Like a headache probably. Like in your head? Like,
well, bleeding at the women, nose. Like, couldn't wear their hair short.
No. Yeah, not really.
So that's... Yeah. That advice can't apply to everyone.
Yeah. Well, remember, if there's bleeding at the nose, violent bleeding at the nose may be generally stopped by plugging the nostril with lint dipped in...
Lint?
dipped in strong vinegar.
Oh.
Applying at the same time, clot the wetted with cold water externally. Should this fail, surgical aid should be then had recourse to...
This is ridiculous.
And then deafness. Here we go. Let's cure deafness. Take an ounce of oil of sweet almonds and the same quantity of camphorated spirits of wine mix. Then, I believe, put them together, pour a few drops into the ear every night, and put in a bit of cotton. Observe whatever may be the cause of the deafness. The head should be always kept warm. Toothaches, corns... Oh, an ointment for sore nipples. This is a good one. Yep. Yep.
Okay, this is clearly the internet, way before the internet.
Yeah.
Because this has everything you would need.
Flatulency. So, gentle laxatives, moderate exercise, and a careful diet are the only remedies for this unpleasant disease, which is either occasioned by intemperance or... costiveness?
What do those mean?
I don't know.
We
no
we
idea.
Went to college, but yeah. I don't know if I've heard those words.
Heartburn.
So hold on. You have a disease.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. No, I yeah, believe you're talking about one of the cats.
No.
I believe it might be Biscuit. No. I've heard his.
You openly
his
talk
flatulence.
About your disease.
I think that some people's medical history are meant to be left alone.
Not according to modern domestic cookery.
No, it does say here, keep everything to yourself.
I like that it's about, it comes off as it's about cooking, but then they're like,
well, it's like, here's if you how eat to... this food, this is what's going to happen.
You know, oh, did you become deaf because you ate fish the wrong way? Here's
you
the
ate
solution.
A calf head. Yeah. Heartburn, to treat it, you drink stale liquors and flatulent food.
That's not what that...
It'll promote this disease. Oh, so don't take those. Consequently, they should be avoided. So if you don't want heartburn, just don't drink stale liquor and flatulent food. Yeah.
This is enough.
Yeah, this is enough.
This is way too much.
Yeah, this is so much. There's so much.
I would not
Woo!
Do well
Look at all this.
In this time period.
Oh, the kitchen maid. The cook maid. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep, I'm good.
We're talking about all the maids.
If I ever have the opportunity to go back in time, I'm not going back to this year.
Yeah. Yeah. No. But that is 18 and 19 for the plate in time. What do you think, Kaylee? Huh?
What
did
you,
it?
What
did it change your mind about how crazy bad 18, 19 could be?
I think there were some important things that happened, but
yeah,
and you know, as you all probably know, I like mid-century modern. Things. I like learning about that time period. I will never be interested in the 1800s.
Oh.
Maybe late 1800s, like kind of that industrial age, Victorian era, or leading up to the Victorian era, but otherwise, no, none of this made me want to be like, yeah, I want to read some books about this time and, you know, find out what the fashion was. And I want to eat something from 1819.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this did not change my mind at all. So
trying to see if they've got a remedy for interest in old plate and time years. I'm trying to find it in here. Didn't find it. I thought it'd be just past gout or gravel.
Okay.
But apparently not. So, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. What I think about 1819, thank you for asking, is that it was hard to research. It really was.
I bet.
Because I think a lot of people just automatically associate it with, like, what was being made for, like, a good 400-year stretch. Of just like you're eating a lot of soups and stews and cuts of meat.
Things are that developing, are boiled. So they're not really exciting yet.
Right. And and it's kind of like people who actually had interest in cooking and were trying to come up with recipes or receipts back then, they were more than likely the people who should not know how to read or write. You know, like indentured servitude or slaves or yeah. So it's one of those things where you start looking through a lot of this stuff and you see this book and you can tell that it's like, oh, this is for somebody who like worked in a royal house or like somebody of honor in England. And they were like, I will publish this book and I bet it will make even more money for this estate. And go from there because everybody will be doing what we're doing. And it's like, okay.
Well, and just think, folks, medical advancement and improvements were nowhere near, like, things were still bad in 1950s, 60s, 70s, where people didn't know how to solve certain diseases or, you know, find cures or anything. So just imagine living in 1819 and you're like, oh, I ate this ham wrong and you actually like have a stroke or something.
Yeah.
And that's what they think it is.
'Cause it is. Don't go to the doctor unless you can't say your name or you're bleeding.
I know that was a bad example, but it's like, you know, they thought that certain things caused ailments or whatever when it's completely weird. And so then they have these, you know, remedies that are just like, oh, you can help your deafness by putting almond oil in your ear.
Well, and like, just, you know,
it just, it's not, you know, the people that lived during that time, props to them, because I couldn't do it.
The thing that I always imagine is like a family taking an old man in and they're like, Grandpop keeps fidgeting and twitching and he falls to the ground and he doesn't reply to anything. And then the doctors, he's just like, oh, did he talk to his mother-in-law? It's like, what? And then it's just like, no, his mother-in-law is dead. He's like almost 80 years old. Oh, well, I don't know. He's going to die.
Are there like taking hard drugs like in Coca-Cola back when?
They're like, well, here, put some heroin in a cotton swab. Stick it in your ear. You're like, oh, my gosh.
It just. Yeah. Livelihood, food, all of that back then. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just
crazy times, guys.
Yeah. They did what they could. So
they did.
I'll give them that.
Oh, no. I have a cat named Benicio.
He wants food from 1819.
Yeah, he does.
He's like, give me that ham. Yeah. Give me those potatoes and carrots.
Let me have calf head, cod's head. I don't care. Whatever.
Put almond oil in my ear so I'm not deaf anymore.
There's times I think he's deaf, but he's not. Oh, he just,
I have heartburn. I'm a cat. I have heartburn. Yeah. Give me some stale liquor.
Right. You guys need to stop giving me so much stale liquor and flatulent food because I need to be staying away from my heartburn. But anyway, thank you, Kaylee, for joining me on a trip on the plate in time to 1819, where you never wanted to go in the first place. It's really great. Yep. We will see everybody next time in 1887. Hey, we're getting close. Yeah, you know, we're getting towards that modern.
To me,
you know,
that sounds more interesting.
Yeah.
So that should be a good one.
Industrial Revolution. Yeah. And the trains and
child labor.
Child labor.
18-hour work days.
Yeah. Yeah.
History.
History with a plate in time. Eat up, children, because you got to get back on the clock. Yep. We'll see everybody next time. 1887. Goodbye.
Bye.
This episode of Culinary Convo was written, produced, edited, and created by yours truly, Devin Rehm, and is a part of Mouthful Productions. Please check us out on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook at Culinary Convo, and our website, culinaryconvo.com, for recipes, episodes, resources, and send an email to culinaryconvopod@gmail.com with your fan suggestions or recipe submissions. You can also support the podcast by going to anchor.fm/culinaryconvo1/support so we can purchase cooking or audio equipment to help create a better podcast, or by using the funds to help further the exploration of Culinary Convo by ordering subscription boxes, food kits, or ordering food products to review. So shout out to our first supporter, Convonaut Dylan. Thank you. I also want to give audio credit to Soundtrap for our intro, transitions, and outro music. Thank you.